Margaret.
Hey, Holly, how are you?
Oh, you know, new year, new me. Can you tell?
I can. I love it. And they are new glasses.
Yeah, because, you know, it's the only accessory you really need when all we do is Zoom. So I'm super excited about today's podcast.
I am too.
We have Alex.
This is a good one.
Yeah. We have Alex Tremble from the American Conservation Experience, which two of my favorite things, right? Leadership and mentoring and culture. Well, that's three things, but the culture experience and the environment and volunteering in the environment. So really, really cool organization and a super cool guest.
Yeah. Somebody who is so passionate about what he does.
For sure.
That makes our passion look almost non-existent.
We look so sleepy.
Yeah. So happy, excited for our listeners to hear his thoughts and to really feel his passion.
Yes. Welcome.
So hi, and welcome to the Better People podcast. I am Margaret Urich.
And I'm Holly DePalma.
And with us today, we have Alex Tremble. And Alex is the Chief Culture and Communications Officer for the American Conservation Experience and host of the Executive Appeal podcast. So Alex, based on your really varied experience, I mean, everything that you've done, everything that you're currently doing, what would be most helpful for you to share with our HR community today? What do they need to know about Alex?
If they wanted to know something about me, I would say, one, I'm almost never serious. So just FYI, we're going to do a lot of laughing today.
Oh, good.
almost never serious. But the second is I don't believe in living in a fantasy world. I think it's not helpful. If your listeners are in the area of diversity and professional development and culture improvement across the organization, I think that is as a critical thing is that we are not living in a fantasy world. When I say that, what I'm saying is that throughout my career, I've had the honor of working in so many different places and so many different spaces, whether it be with political leaders, with senior government leaders, with nonprofits, with profits, and so on and so forth. And what I found is that when we address the topic of diversity, equity, inclusion, and we're diverse in topics of succession planning and so on and so forth, there is a wanting, there is a desire to focus on teaching people that different isn't bad. Different isn't bad. There's a focus on teaching people to understand and value each other's perspectives. That's absolutely critical. But the reality is that you and I live in a real world where we know the data says that people who are taller generally get put into more leadership positions. People who are more quote unquote attractive are believed more often. People who are of a certain skin color get this. People who are a woman or a male. The reality is that we don't live in a fair world. So the only way to address these issues is to go into it eyes wide open and say, okay, it's wonderful that we have all this this great information on why people being different isn't bad, but what are we literally doing to increase diversity within our ranks? What are our hiring stats, right? What are our promotion stats? What are our vendor stats? Like, all of these things are very objective. And to be completely honest, if an organization is only focused on educating their staff and not necessarily elevating their staff, then I think that there's a huge missed opportunity. And I think at some point, staff are going to become disillusioned and no longer be able to belong for the ride. So that's what I enjoy working on, is helping organizations transition from the education to the elevation. Oh, that's wonderful. I didn't even think about that. That sounds good, though.
There you go. Write that one down.
Along those lines, Alex, one of the things that I read when I was preparing to talk with you was an assessment tool that you created that provides for an organization deeper insights into cultural gaps. Hmm. And I'd love to learn more about that, what that was, what it may or may not have revealed, and what the organization did because of the data they received from that assessment.
I cannot take full credit for that myself. I worked with a phenomenal woman, August Ball, and her organization. She is just phenomenal. So what we did was when I came on to this organization, I've been now there almost 2 years. The first things we need to do is do some sort of assessment, because the reality is that the organization has grown exponentially over the last now almost 20 years, 20 years being next year, our anniversary. We have now elevated to the second or third largest national conservation corps in the country. And as many of your listeners will know, as you're growing that fast, sometimes systems and processes don't keep up, right? And so when I was brought in, part of my job was to help create those systems and processes, because that is a part of culture, how you do your work. And so we brought in August Ball to do a series of trainings, but then also work with us to create a culture assessment. And that assessment asked questions in regards to pay equity, right? It asked culture questions in regards to availability for telework, on communication from leaders to leaders. It was a whole onslaught of different questions that we asked. And from that information, from that data, we are able to say fairly confidently, because we had a pretty good sample size of employees who completed it, that, you know, ACE has done really, really well in regards to diversity, in regards to persons from the LGBTQ community. We have, I think, about over 30% of our staff are from that, identify within that community. We've done also fairly well with people who are who identify as being someone with a physical disability. And that is, again, really cool, especially given the work that we do, because we're breaking those stereotypes that you have to be the super fit abs rock climbing person in order to be outside doing great conservation work. But what we found was that there was, and this is why this data is so important. We had, I think, five people of African-American descent in the organization, right? We had three Native Americans, right? So the survey—
Out of how many? 10 or 200?
Our organization has roughly 160 people, full-time staff people. So
there were some definite cultural gaps.
Definite cultural gaps. But what was cool, like, people were really worried about that. And I was like, dude, like, this is not something to worry about. What we're doing is being transparent. We're being honest with ourselves, because, again, if you live in this fantasy world, like, everything's just hunky-dory, then you don't actually address anything and no one can hold you accountable. So having this data and coming out and saying, yeah, this is wonderful that we've done really great in these other areas, but over here, we need to focus some efforts. And this is why I personally have moved away from the idea of increasing diversity within an organization to focusing on underrepresentation, right? Because representation is much more adaptable, because there's certain areas of the country, because, again, we work nationally, there's certain areas of the country that the population may be 98% Caucasian, right? And should we hold ourselves accountable for getting a whole bunch of different people from who don't even want to be there in that space? Or do we say, okay, who are the people who are underrepresented in this area? What's their education? What's their economic situation? And so on and so forth. Asking those questions allow you to be, I think, much more intentional as you're trying to increase quote unquote diversity, which is, again, I think we should move to underrepresentation. Again, that also works for organizations who are global in nature, right? Because if you're focused on, we need to make sure that we have more women in leadership. Well, in some countries, women are doing very well in leadership. And so maybe you need more males, or maybe you need more people who are religiously from a Christian background or Buddhist background. It all depends on the context of where you're working. Sorry, I get on these rants. So please stop me.
I feel you on that. I mean, I'll tell you, years ago, and I'm 100. So years ago,
he's not lying.
I'm propped up here. I'm in like a hospital.
Margaret, you're going to get in trouble when she gets up when this is over.
years ago, I worked for an organization. It was an education environment. And, you know, there was a focus on Latinx students and the absence of them. And I remember, you know, the HR person pulling data and saying, well, we have 4 Latinx employees, 0 Latinx faculty, right? So it's, again, just like you said, it's sort of a holistic viewpoint of this issue. And I said, how are we going to recruit students when they look up and see nobody here? So anyway, I mean, I really appreciate that way of looking at things of I mean, I love living in a fantasy, but you know,
she's again not lying.
but I'll tell you that feeling, I hope people realize that feeling of seeing representation, it's real. I still remember, regardless of your political affiliation, when President Obama was elected, I worked at the Department of the Interior overseeing executive leadership development there. And I remember jogging up the steps one day to the front door. And I imagined myself as Obama. Like, I had never done that before. I'd been in that building so many times before, but it was just like, wow, like this is possible, right? Mm-hmm. It's really, really important that we have that representation. And again, this is a very maybe controversial topic, but it's not also just about the representation, right? Because you can have I'm not sure how open we can be here, but you can have a Black guy, a white guy, a Latino woman. We can have all those different people who all grew up in Massachusetts, who all were in the same school district, who all have the same economic situation. And yes, they're absolutely going to have different contexts of life. Absolutely. But that at the same time, it's not still varying on that bigger level, on that larger level, which is having someone from California, the West Coast, or down South, they have a different context. Midwest has a different context. People who are in a higher economic level, they have a different context, just as people from a lower economic level. And again, I want to be really intentional with saying, and just because you came from a higher economic level does not mean you are bad, or doesn't mean you don't need help or assistance. Because there are a lot of people who are in those realms that I work with who didn't have certain resources because maybe their parents weren't around, right? Or maybe they got everything they ever wanted. So now they feel insecure. We have to be very open when we're and open on our mindset as we are working and talking with people if we're going to do this work effectively.
I think you bring up such an important concept, which is that diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging goes far beyond what you can see. Mm-hmm. And so I'd love to hear, maybe what your most proud moment is around creating more diverse environments or creating a more effective way to onboard or keep people understanding and creating the conversations around treating and understanding differences.
That's a great question. I'm going to come up with a really easy one. My answer should be fairly, I think it's very simple and not super complex. So I hope everyone will still appreciate it. I'm over culture, which is everything, packs everything within the organization, but I'm also comms, right? And so one of the most important things for me, we just got finished talking about it, is representation, right? There is a reality that there is in the environmental industry. It's very segregated. There is not much diversity, quote unquote, diversity within that environment, within the industry. And unfortunately, a lot of people grow up saying, that's not me. We don't do that. We don't go hike. We don't go into the forest. And in addition to then that self-talk, it's also companies and industries who've never worked with those people and don't think about those people. So they don't talk to them. They don't show images and so on and so forth. So one of the coolest thing I've just worked on, which I really, really, I'm very proud of, is when I came into ACE, one of the first things I think all organizations should do is identify their values. So because the values are how you do your work, right? The mission and vision is where you're going and why you're going there, but the values should be how you're going to do it. So once you identify your values, then you define your values, which a lot of organizations don't actually do. So what does being inclusive mean, right? What does customer focus mean? So you have to actually now define those values. And once you've now defined those values, if you're a really, really great organization, you also then identify examples of behaviors of those values, right? You actually literally come up with a list of this is what it looks like within our organization to be customer focused, right? And once you've developed a list of different behaviors, you now have that so you can create interview questions. You now have that so you can create assessment for your performance. You have that so you can do your policies. And all those definitions and those examples should drive so much change. And so once I've developed those values, I then went using my comms hat and created a series of videos to communicate to our audience internal to ACE what our values are, but also externally to ACE. And when we did that, we were very, very, very intentional with being with showing the imagery of not only the different diverse individuals that we work with inside of our organization, but also the places and spaces that we work in, the stories that we tell, in the type of work that we do. And I can't tell you, when I started sharing these videos internally just to get initial feedback, the positive responses that people were sharing, like, I didn't even know there were more than me here, right? But I've never seen myself represented in this organization. And it's such a small thing, but this is why I enjoy working on these. Again, I'm very values focused and I'm very behavior focused, because I honestly, again, this is going to be fairly risque to some of your staff or some of your listeners, but I tell people all the time, I don't care if you like me because I'm black. I'm a black guy, everyone, by the way. If someone doesn't like me simply because I'm black, I could care less. If an employer staff member doesn't like me because I'm black, I could care absolutely less. And this goes for any demographic. And the reason not being because I don't think it's stupid. I think it's because I have no control over what you think. I have absolutely no control of what you think. But what I can hold you accountable for is your behaviors. And that's why identifying behaviors, which are acceptable and not acceptable, are so important within the organization. And then promoting those behaviors, but then also holding people accountable for those behaviors. So this is why I love doing this work. And I do a lot of speaking and talking on these topics as well. But thank you for asking this question, which got me on this big rant. So I apologize.
No, quite all right. And we love it. And your passion is so evident. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, so we know that our members love to hear stories, and you've been telling us some great stories already, which is awesome. But they also love to learn from your experience, right? Or from experiences. So when you think about identifying the underrepresented and helping to bring in, right, or approach how you're hiring with that lens, right, to try and recruit more of the underrepresented. Mm-hmm. What are some tips you can offer for how to do that? Because that's often the question we hear from our members. How can we do this? Like, we want to do it. We know what's good. You know, we know we want to do it. How? What's the best way? So what are some steps they could take to doing that?
I'm going to answer your question with asking the question. If you were a leader within your organization and you wanted to improve employee satisfaction, what would you do? Well, there's a lot of people who would be like, oh, you know, maybe throw some more parties and, you know, throw some pizza in there, or, you know, give out some award or something like that. But a smaller number of people would say, I'd ask the employees. Right? Mm-hmm. You're trying to engage the employees. You maybe ask them what could you do to help and engage them more. And that transitions to most things, especially in regards to recruitment and outreach. Talking to those communities, you know, going to different organizations and different groups and saying, hey, look, we're looking to build a relationship with this community. What are your recommendations? And because I'll tell everyone, just so you know, when you start this, you may have some organizations giving the side eye. I'll just be completely honest, because there's a lot of organizations who are looking for a quota, and they'll just come into a community, do a couple, you know, throw some jobs out there and say, oh, you know, if you got it, you got it. You don't buy. I'm going. I got my numbers. I said I did it. I got my photo op, right? So it looks really good. But so a lot of organizations kind of get, you know, sour to it. Like, are you really here to build a relationship, or are you here for a photo op? And so it may take time, but I would implore all organizations as much as possible, identify those organizations, identify those communities, identify those groups you say you want to develop a relationship with, and start reaching out to them. It's going to be about you identifying how can you provide value to them, right? Because all relationships are based on value, all relationships, even our marriages, our best friends. There's absolutely no relationship that's healthy where those individuals in that relationship aren't providing value to each other. So provide value. Understand it's going to take some time. And now here's the other side of that hat. Relationships take time to build. And so does that mean that you as an organization just sit around and wait for those relationships to build? Absolutely not. You also got to do that short-term work, which is, you know, how can I identify the magazines, right? The social media channels, the different groups that I can partner with, that I can share my job opportunities with, to make sure that it's getting in front of the right crowd. When I was in my master's program, we did this case study of this organization who was looking to increase its diversity within the ranks. And they were just like, look, we can't figure it out. We are advertising over and over and over. We just can't get it. And so the question was, okay, where are you advertising? Well, we spend so much time and money and we're advertising the Washington Post, but we're just not getting in diversity. Oh, who's reading the Washington Post? That's not to say that no people from underrepresented communities read it, but what's the demographics, right? So you guys, again, it comes back to full circle data, right? And being willing to test the data and being willing to call yourself wrong. And the last thing I'll say, and I'll wrap up this piece, is when I came into the organization, the first thing I told everyone is that I'm extremely passionate about this. And this is something I'm dedicating to make change and making progress on. But I can promise you all, I am going to get this wrong. And we are going to get this wrong. But the option of waiting for the perfect and having no progress happen versus taking steps forward consistently and knowing that every once in a while I may have to take a step back, but there's progress made, I'd much rather take those steps forward and worry about the misstep and having to reframe and just do better next time.
Yeah. So I love that, because there can be no success really without some objective failures. I'm 100 and I'm also a giant failure. But, you know, one of the things you do is a lot of coaching of executives. And one of the testimonials I read was that you really helped an individual with networking skills. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that HR in a way, to create community, to get into new environments, to help create relationships, we need to network. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is the advice that you give to help someone increase their network?
So this is my passion area. Harvard came out with a study last year, which we all knew we already knew the results, but they came out with a study saying it, that, you know, your success, your economic success, as an individual largely depends on the individuals you're around, right? We've all known this. And unfortunately, the reality is that many people from underrepresented communities, tend to believe in this falsehood, this lie, this the propaganda that we've all been fed. Hard work takes you to the top. It doesn't. I can promise you all right now, you all know someone who works really hard and they're not where they want to be, right? So hard work is important. I'm getting myself in trouble here. You don't get to the table unless you work hard, but it's not hard work that differentiates you. It's what you were talking about, Holly. It's that it's your network. It's your the relationships that you have and who can open doors for you, provide you information, who can get you resources and access. What I recommend and what I talk about in my own talks and speeches is what I call the 4C relationship building model. And so I'll go through it really quickly. Feel free to ask questions. There are 4 processes that someone needs to do in order to be an effective strategic networker. And I did this, I created this as I did research via LinkedIn surveys, my interviews of executives who are successful across both government, nonprofit, and private sector. And this is what I found in my literature review. The first is mindset change. As with everything, the first C is mindset change, because it does not matter what anyone teaches you about networking. If you think networking is sleazy, if you think networking is beneath you, right, or is what the bad people do, you won't do it.
Legit. Right?
So mindset is the first thing you have to be able to change. The second is internal clarity. Now, this is another place where people tend to mess up. They tend to think about, okay, networking, I gotta find Margaret, I gotta find Holly, right? I wanna build a relationship with them. But if you don't know what your goals are, right? If you don't know the outcome you're looking for, how do you even know that Margaret's the right person you should be talking to? Doesn't mean you don't talk to Margaret, but if you only have so much time and we only have so much time, energy, and resources, then maybe we should be a little more intentional about where we spend and direct the energy and resources. So again, for an example, if you are looking to promote a program or launch a program within your organization, you need support for that program, and it has, let's say it's an IT program, then maybe you don't need to spend your time networking with the person who does acquisitions. Maybe you need to be talking to the person who oversees or has access to resources, whether it be dollars, whether it be political support, whatever it may be, right? So internal clarity is understanding what your goals, aspirations are so you can identify those right people, but then also taking that second step and figuring out what resources do you have access to, right? Because I mentioned earlier, the only way to build real substantial relationships is value-based relationships. I am providing value to someone else. Well, how do you provide value to someone else if you don't know what you have to give to them? So doing that works. And again, there's a whole other component, but I'll keep it there. The next is external clarity. External clarity is now you're focusing on Margaret. Now you're focusing on Holly, saying, okay, where are they at? How do I get in contact with them? Are they a part of any organization? Well, who are their friends? Who are their enemies? What are their goals? What are their aspirations? How can I be a benefit to them? That is when you start talking about the external person, right? External clarity. And then finally, it's behavior choice. Again, everything to me comes back to behaviors. And that's, okay, do I shake this person's hand? Do I look them in the eye? What should I say? What words should I use? Should I ask them for advice or should I ask them for their opinion? Those are two different things, two different approaches, but research shows they actually produce the same result in certain contexts. So, I love this stuff and I really dive into this research. And this is what I like to teach my clients. So again, when I'm speaking on at events and whatnot is the reality is, again, this full circle back to our diversity stuff. But if we say we're about diversity, if we say we're about inclusivity, if we say that we want to provide a real opportunity for members from underrepresented communities to rise to the levels, and we're not teaching them how to build relationships with the decision makers, then we're not doing anything. Because about 80% of jobs are filled via the black market. What is that? Relationships. 70% of jobs aren't even posted online. So if we're not doing this, then we're not making a real concerted effort at diversifying our ranks.
I love this. I love the 4 C's. I love how you laid it out. And I think it's so helpful because it doesn't come naturally for a lot of people. We don't really know how to do this. And we think networking or a lot of things, right? Or we have this very surface level kind of concept of what things are. Mm-hmm. And what you just did is really break it down. And what word was occurring for me is being intentional, mm-hmm. like really thinking about what you're doing and being intentional with it. So What are you going to be intentional about this coming year? It's the beginning of the year, right? We're writing goals. We're thinking about that. Where's your intention for the year?
My intention is twofold. One is, you know, again, ACE, my organization, American Conservation Experience. We, for the longest time, didn't have an external presence. And we have been doing things the way we've always been doing because that's the way they always worked, right? And because the economy changed, the job market changed, things got more difficult. So for me, my intention for this year is being very intentional with our external communications. Again, because that's my other hat I wear in this role is, you know, how do we get ACE in front of the different communities that we say we want to bring to the table, right? Both from a staff perspective, as well as from our members' perspective, because basically what ACE does is we provide young people across the country opportunities to engage in conservation, preservation type opportunities, development opportunities. So that is one of my really strong intentions for this year. The second, on the culture side of my hat, is I am very, very focused this year. Now that we've defined all of our values, I am now in the process of creating interview questions so that organization-wide, we can make sure that we are asking those questions to say, are you in alignment with our value before we bring someone into our organization? I love that John Maxwell once said, you know, how do you make sure you have an engaged and motivated workforce? Well, make sure you hire engaged and motivated people, right? So that's what I want to make sure we're doing is I want to make sure that people are in alignment with our value on the front end. So that the interview questions is something that's really important to me. And then finally, for me personally, I love speaking. And so that's the other thing. It's just, I'll be definitely doing a lot more speaking this year for organizations, whether it be retreats or workshops or things like that. But I really want to be able to, again, spread the gospel, right? On relationship building and how to improve and elevate organizations' cultures.
That's awesome. Fantastic. I want to ask you one last question. And it's going to go back to your one of your intentions for the year. But what's your favorite interview question, and what are you trying to get at?
Goodness gracious, you! That's a hard question.
Oh, that's come on!
It look, I tell you, I get interviewed a lot. Oh, question asked to me, or do I ask on my podcast, The Executive Appeal?
No, you ask. A candidate who is interviewing.
Oh, a candidate. Okay, that type of interview.
Sorry. There are so many questions. Wow, we could have taken this so many different ways. But let's go with interview question. And then if there's time, we'll do the podcast question. But go ahead.
Oh, goodness gracious. Oh, my God. That is actually a hard question. One of the ones I use recently, I can't remember verbatim off the top of my head. Because, again, we write all this stuff down. Kind of like very scripted interviews. Was saying, one I really liked actually was we were hiring for a social media position in our organization. And the question was, you know, given your review of our social media channels and our ACE as a whole, what do you believe that we should be doing better or differently to increase engagement in underrepresented communities? Now, again, it sounds like a weird question, but I loved it because there were so many ideas that were shared from the candidates answering that question. It separated people from people who had done no research,
right?
And the people who had obviously been looking through our feeds and had notes, which were really detailed. So those people really stood out. And the others were, it also showed how people think, how those people interviewing for this position thought about inclusion. And I'll give you an example. There's one person who said, well, I think that ACE should just do a better job of, you know, making a post during Black History Month about Black History stuff, making a post about women's stuff during Women's History Month, making a post. And I'm like, no. I do not like that. And if you see ACE's ACE's LinkedIn page. I made a comment myself this year. I wrote a thing for Martin Luther King Day. I don't like when organizations simply post something about a particular group because it's that particular group's month, because that's pandering. And it doesn't really mean anything. So if you care about diversity, if you care about LGBTQ, then you should be posting about those things and showing how you're doing those things throughout the year. You should be doing it for, you know, Black History Month. That should be up throughout the year. Like, we have to break that. What's easy to just make a post during this month, we're going to make our social media handle, we're going to black it out or put a rainbow on it. Again, this is me. I realize people not like it, but my question is, did making your social media handle a rainbow, did that help? Who did that help? Right? Did you create some policies to be more inclusive to them? Did you create a new program? Did you dedicate resources? Or did you just make a nice little pretty flag, right? And that's what I'm always about is real progress. Again, I have a comms background. I understand that perception is reality. So you do have to always have that lens on to make sure people know and see that you are making change, but you also got to do it, right? You can't just have the optics.
Right. Which takes us full circle to what you said at the very beginning, which was educate versus elevate, right? Mm. And I think posting for Black History Month is educating. Posting all the time about it is elevating, right? So it's just, that's awesome.
You're awesome.
This has been great. And Holly and I could go on and on talking with you. You've been a great host. The passion just just oozes out of you. And it just makes it like really awesome for us to be in your presence and to be listening to you. We really appreciate you spending time with us today. And, you know, can't wait to stay connected and continue networking with you.
Thank you so much for having me. All of your guests, please do check out American Conservation Experience, usaconservation.org. We do really do some really great stuff. We engage youth. And please do think about it. And if you like to reach out to me, find me on LinkedIn, Alex Tremble, T-R-E-M-B-L-E.
All right. Awesome. Great. Take care. Thanks, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you. See ya.
Thank you for listening. We hope you got a ton of value out of this episode.
Before we go, we want to thank the sponsor of our show, the Mid-Atlantic Employers Association, more commonly referred to as MEA. MEA provides human resources services to hundreds of businesses across numerous industries every day, bridging gaps that restrain innovation and growth.
If you need support around people issues, reach out to meainfo.org. Better people, better outcomes.